Blog Talk Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Movie Addict Headquarters with your host, Betty Jo Tucker, author of Confessions of a Movie Addict, right here at www.blogtalkradio.com.
Toto, I have a feeling we're not in Kansas anymore. That's right, Dorothy. This is Movie Addict Headquarters. You don't have to be a movie addict to visit here, but if you are one, it's definitely the place for you. I'm your host, Betty Jo Tucker, and today my lovely producer, Nikki Starr, and I are happy to celebrate Veterans Day by talking about Hollywood's top war movies, as well as about a powerful new documentary concerning World War II MIAs. It should be a great show, because film critic John P. McCarthy, the editor of Cineman Syndicate, and Jennifer Powers, who co-directed and co-produced Last Flight Home, are with us. Now, although Jennifer's filmmaking partner, Daniel T. O'Brien, isn't able to be here as originally planned, we hope to reschedule him for another program in the near future. But before we begin, I'd like to give major props to Fausta Wirtz, Jazz Shaw, A.J. Hockery, and our own Nikki Starr for their impassioned campaign speeches on behalf of their candidates for Best Movie President on last week's show. Anyone who hasn't heard these terrific speeches yet, please, please check out the archives. However, the bad news for Nikki and me is that our candidates, Bill Pullman in Independence Day and Polly Bergen in Kisses for My President, lost out to Harrison Ford in Air Force One. Nikki, shall we put this disappointment behind us and move on?
Yes, we should. Just like the rest of the country in the election, we most certainly should. Yes.
Well said. I agree. All right. So, do you have a favorite war movie, Nikki?
I do, actually. I have a favorite war movie, and it's Saving Private Ryan.
Well, you can't go wrong with Tom Hanks and Steven Spielberg. That movie almost won the Oscar that year, and a lot of people were disappointed when Shakespeare in Love went home with the Best Picture Oscar. It really was a tremendous, tremendous war movie, and so that's a very good choice. And let's see if John or Jennifer list that one among their selections. Welcome back to Movie Addict Headquarters, John.
Thanks for having me, Betty Jo.
Well, it's always such a pleasure to have you on our show, and it's Jennifer's first visit, so we're very glad that she could be here also. Jennifer, congratulations on your wonderful new documentary.
Oh, thanks so much, and thanks so much for having me here at Movie Addicts Anonymous. Confessing here.
Jennifer, we are addicts, but we're not anonymous.
I'm so very grateful for that.
We shout it to the highest realm that we're movie addicts, right, Nikki?
Yes, that was a good way to put it.
All right. Well, okay. Let's begin by talking about Hollywood's best war movies, and let's start with John. John, have you come up with your top three?
I have. I mean, there's a lot of movies, a lot of great war movies over the years, but my number one is probably my favorite movie of all time, which is Apocalypse Now, Francis Ford Coppola's 1979 Vietnam movie. I just can't get enough of that movie, and, you know, think it's really, really probably the best war movie of all time.
I imagine you have a lot of company on that one, and what performances in that film. Robert Duvall, I still have that image of him in that movie, and what is that great line? I love the smell of napalm in the morning.
I love the smell of napalm in the morning. There's so many great lines from the movie. In fact, and the ending, of course, the horror, you know, is a classic line, and that's the last line of the book, Heart of Darkness by Joseph Conrad, that the movie's based on. But it it sort of sums up war pretty in a nutshell, let's say.
That is an excellent.
Robert Duvall is great. Martin Sheen is great. I mean, Marlon Brando got a lot of criticism for his performance in the last quarter of the movie, but I have nothing bad to say about it. And, you know, you have a young Larry Fishburne is in the movie.
I forgot about that.
And Harrison Ford is actually in the movie.
You're kidding me. I don't remember him.
He has a small part when Martin Sheen's character is given the assignment to go up river and find Marlon Brando's character, Colonel Kurtz, and terminate him. Harrison Ford is in the trailer with the general as they're having this very tense lunch, and he's basically the general's aide and hands him all the information for his assignment. So.
Well, thank you for reminding us about that. What about your other two movies that are in your top three?
My second one is The Bridge on the River Kwai, David Lean's World War II movie from 1957. It's really, really a classic. It's actually number 13 on the AFI list of the greatest movies of all time.
Right, and that wonderful song, you know, the background music in it, wow.
That's right. Well, there's so many great things about it, the cinematography and the performances. Alec Guinness won his only Oscar for it as the British Colonel Nicholson, William Holden. You know, it's really captures the irony of war and what it means to try and uphold your honor when you're a prisoner of war, as they were being held by the Japanese in Burma. And the soldiers, the Allied soldiers, mainly British and American, build a bridge for the Japanese as a sort of a point of honor. And then at the same time, another group led by William Holden is trying to blow it up. So
it's certainly a classic. There's no denying that. What's your third?
And my third, since it's Veterans Day, we've got to salute soldiers, and I don't think there's any better salute to soldiers than Patton from 1970 with George C. Scott, who plays the World War II general, George S. Patton, sort of the ultimate soldier, the sort of a he-man and an intellectual all rolled up into one. And it's, you know, it's a warts and all portrait. But, you know, you'll never forget that opening, that prologue with him standing in front of the giant American flag.
That's for sure.
Shouting philosophy about America. And, of course, he won the Academy Award, and it won Best Picture.
It's a great character study. I think one of the best character studies. So we have, from John, Apocalypse Now, Bridge Over the River Kwai, and Patton. Now, how about you? Those are great choices. And how about you, Jennifer? What war movies do you think are the top three, and which ones did Daniel pick?
Well, I got to tell you that those three just listed are spectacular films, and as Dan and I were having the debate over which movies, if we had to name three, which would be on our list, those three came up, and Saving Private Ryan ended up on both of Dan and I's lists, but for different reasons. My list, I had a hard time with my list in that as much as I love movies, being part of this documentary has given me a bias about war movies that I see things a little bit differently now. And so So the first one that I picked is a little bit trivial, but I loved it, again, for that man's man thing. And for the old-time traditional war movie, when there was at one time maybe a romance to it, which is an odd thing to use in a sentence regarding war, and that was The Flying Leathernecks. I mean, I like John Wayne, but the thing that puts me over the top is they used actual war footage from Peleliu in the Battle of Palau. That kind of gets that on there, and then I go to Saving Private Ryan simply because it truly depicts what war costs.
So you have Flying Leathernecks and Saving Private Ryan, and
then the because, you know, I came to the dance with Last Flight Home. So I'm gonna put that on my list simply because it really depicts that these prices are still being paid for wars that have been so long fought.
How 60 years ago. How
true,
and you would know that from that. And Daniel had Saving Private Ryan, and I bet he had Last Flight Home.
Well, he didn't. We're not very. The thing is that the two of us have a highly honed who's on first, what's on second sort of routine, and neither of us are very good with rules. So he came up with four, and I actually came up with a fourth as well. So
okay.
in our battle, Danny has Black Hawk Down.
Oh yeah.
For obvious reasons, Deer Hunter. And then Saving Private Ryan is tied with Enemy at the Gates for him.
Oh yes, that was a great one too. What was your fourth one?
It's Doctor Strangelove.
Oh yes.
Oh well, we all love Doctor Strangelove. That was one of the ones that I was considering. And you know, I think we have one of our regular callers who's interested in probably mentioning his favorite war movie. So let's catch him. And see what he brings to the table. Hello, is this Jazz?
Hi, Betty Jo. How are you? Yes, it is.
Well, I'm fine and so glad to hear from you. I can hardly wait to hear what your favorite Hollywood war movie is.
Yeah, I had no trouble narrowing it down to three. Most of them already mentioned, but my number one of my favorite movies of all time of any genre is Patton. I've watched it more times than I could count. I could probably recite the entire thing for you. I think it was one of the best war movies ever made. My second pick was Tora, Tora, Tora.
Oh, good.
Which I thought was spectacular just because instead of, you know, the genre in that era only showing the rah, rah, go America, it really took the time to try to show it from the Japanese side as well and kind of switched back and forth and gave you a flavor of, you know, what people were experiencing on both sides.
Right.
Of the battles, and I thought that was very good. And the last one was Run Silent, Run Deep.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, that one was good too. So we've got a couple of people mentioning Patton, and also we have Saving Private Ryan that's getting a lot of acclaim from our little group here today. But can you stay on with us, Jazz?
I'll be on in the background. Yeah,
oh,
I just
okay,
wanted to get those in. I love the old movies. You know me. I have a huge collection of old movies. There's a lot of new ones that are great. I love Deer Hunter, but I just love the old classics.
I think that they're great, too. And my three are kind of interesting because each one represents a different war. And I put The Patriot as number one because I actually thought this was one of Mel Gibson's best performances. When he gets in revenge mode, he's highly entertaining to watch. Oh, is he in the revenge mode in The Patriot? He plays this peaceful man who's drawn into a battle against the British because of his hatred for a cruel British officer. And when he gets to fighting, he uses every 18th century weapon imaginable, muskets, tomahawks, sabers, daggers, bayonets, pistols. In fact, he becomes famous for his lightning attacks, and he's called the Ghost. Everything visual about this movie is first rate. The cinematography just gave the whole thing a painterly look, even amid all the carnage, and the costumes and sets. I just think that must have been the way things looked back in 1776. Of course, that's what a movie addict would think, I guess. But the Smithsonian Institute did serve as the consultant on it. But Mel Gibson's performance, I think, is the thing that sold me. And then the way the movie showed the difference between the ways the two groups fought the war, with the rebels doing the guerrilla tactics and the British using the old traditional military tactics. And my second film was Glory, released in 1989, and the reason I loved that film is because Denzel Washington gave such a brilliant performance. Well, in fact, he got the Best Supporting Actor Oscar playing this angry...
Oh, that's such a good choice.
Yeah, escaped slave and a member of the first company of black soldiers in the American Civil War. I thought that this movie was just an extraordinary history lesson for people who didn't know anything about the way the blacks fought in the Civil War in this 54th Regiment. And Matthew Broderick was great in it also as the colonel who had volunteered to lead that company. And then my third is The Great Raid, which is a more recent film. I don't think very many people have seen this film, but it is terrific. It tells the story of the greatest military rescue operation in U.S. history. And that was during World War II when 120 brave American soldiers undertook the daring rescue of over 500 POWs captured by the Japanese. The sequences showing that rescue are almost unbearably suspenseful, even though we know how things are going to turn out. And most importantly, The Great Raid gave just an impressive tribute to the real-life heroes who deserve to be remembered. The DVD version of The Great Raid has interviews with some of the actual men who took part in that particular event. And I think that movie is a wonderful segue into the next part of our show, which has to do with another movie that deals with World War II action in the Pacific. The name of that movie is, of course, Last Flight Home. So, Jennifer, why don't you tell us what this documentary is all about and how you and Daniel became interested in the project?
Well, all things lead back to skydiving.
Really? You what?
All things lead back to skydiving, jumping out of airplanes.
Skydiving! For heaven's sake! How did that happen?
Well, I, at one point in my life, was a professional skydiver, as was Dan O'Brien. And, in fact, Dan owned a skydiving operation. And one day, Pat Scannon turned up and decided he wanted to learn how to skydive. And I happened to be one of his instructors. And one of the things with any sort of adrenaline sport or aviation is folks come and go. And it's very hard to become emotionally attached to individuals until they've stuck around for a while, they've proven that they're not tourists.
Yes.
And Pat became a very avid skydiver, and very slowly over the course of several years, we began hearing his stories about Palau. And
now when you're talking about Patrick, that's Dr. Patrick Scannon, who was involved who actually The Last Flight Home is about, right?
Yes, he's the founder of an organization called the Bent Prop Project, and Pat's project is to travel to the islands of Palau. He does this on his own dime, on his own vacation time, for over a month each year. He travels there, and he searches the islands, the waters, the mangroves for missing World War II aircraft. And by finding these aircraft, he's able to help identify whether or not there were MIAs aboard and is able to help get our U.S. military organization, the Joint POW-MIA Accounting Command. These are the folks who go out and recover remains and bring them back to Hawaii for identification and then get them to the families. And Pat's work enables JPAC to recover quite a few sets of remains. And we sat around listening to these stories and just marveling at the fact that there's somebody on the planet willing to do this. I mean, this is not a trivial endeavor. You travel out there into nasty jungles and find nothing for days on end before actually coming across something that might be something. The determination and the Indiana Jones aspect of it just fascinated us. All we wanted to do was be part of his project. That's all we wanted to do.
Wow, and I understand that there were more than 200 aircraft that crashed there around the Palau Islands during World War II, and half of the crew members were still missing in action by the time Dr. Scannon started his project.
That is correct.
Oh, I can't now wait to watch this documentary. That sounds fantastic.
Oh,
I really hope you enjoy it. We struggled because we're new filmmakers. That our goal, and I know that this is going to sound a little bit scandalous, when we started this project, it wasn't because we wanted to make a film. We started it because we had to tell this story. We absolutely had to tell the story, and it takes place over 6 years. I believe that there are 8 trips to Palau covered in the film. And then we traveled all across the country meeting the families of these MIAs and interviewing veterans. And it's just been such a privilege to be part of. And it's so very exciting to finally have it finished and to be able to show it.
Well, did you and Daniel get married while you were filming this, or were you married before?
Oh, see, now somebody led you astray. They're going to lead you right into our trap conversation.
Uh-oh.
And the question goes, are you and Dan married? Why, yes, we are.
Oh.
But not to each other.
Oh, but not to each other.
No.
Oh.
We both have extremely supportive spouses who allow us to go off on these incredible adventures. And the other answer is, ew.
Well, I'm glad I asked it that way. That makes it a little...
Well, I was going to say, skydivers should never marry each other, which is what my wife always tells me.
See, Dan and I both broke that rule, too. That's not how that worked out for us. We're both married to skydivers, so...
Oh, wow. Well, you lead an exciting life, but I just was totally impressed with Last Flight Home, and in fact, I have put the cover of the DVD on the Movie Addict Headquarters site, so any listeners can click on that and order Last Flight Home, which I hope that they will do. But it had to be a very, very dangerous movie to make too, because of there was scuba diving, because you had to go down and find the planes that crashed in the water there.
I have to say that the scuba diving is the least dangerous of anything that happens in Palau. The most dangerous stuff that's in Palau has to do with the man-eating crocodiles, and in the swamps and the mangroves of Palau. And I have to say that the first several trips to Palau, I was talking some pretty good smack about how if there's a croc, our camera guy has to get it, has to capture it. You know, I need to see this on our film. And that lasted right up until the moment where we almost saw a crocodile. I don't ever need to see one, ever. They're just, you know, when the hairs on the back of your neck are all standing on end, I don't need those kind of moments.
So the crocodiles were the most challenging part?
No, they were the scariest part, not the most challenging part.
Okay. Well, I want to know what was the most challenging part of doing this film.
You know, I'd have to say that the most challenging part has come after producing the film and now trying to get it out into the public eye, for the folks to know about this story. It's so hard when you're an independent filmmaker and, you know, you're fighting every piece of machinery that's not set up to be able to help promote or to let folks know about a story, unless you're attached with some large company.
Yes, and that's too bad, because we're getting so many films that, you know, are just cookie cutters, and so much of the same thing regurgitated, and then you have something unique like this. I mean, this story, well, that whole area of Palau was ignored, I think. I don't
know
why.
So,
in fact,
yeah,
that was one of my questions I was going to ask you. Why do you think that area receives so little attention?
Well, I think that that answer is several fold. The U.S. forces, the debate over whether or not to attack the Palau Islands and whether or not it was tactically important to take the Palau Islands still goes on today. And I think that has something to do with why we don't hear a lot about Palau. But there was so much else going on around that campaign, between the island hopping campaign and the trip to get back to Manila. Then there's the fact that Palau and the Paleolu Island battle was predicted to take 3 days.
Mm-hmm.
It was predicted to be 3 hard days of battle. Over 3 months later, the island still wasn't secure. And we're talking about an island that's less than 5 square miles and would fit inside Pearl Harbor. This is where the Japanese first introduced cave warfare.
Yes.
They were very well dug in. And the U.S. forces, they landed, and there wasn't a whole lot of fighting. And it wasn't until the forces were drawn in further to the island before the battle really began to commence. So I think I think it's several fold. I think that it just was overshadowed by other larger battles.
Like in Iwo Jima and Okinawa.
Exactly. But I think that it also had to do with a little bit of political expediency, in that it took longer, and there's the debate over whether or not it was necessary. For one thing, Palau was entirely blockaded. There was a maritime blockade. Nothing was getting in or out. So the Bulhazi's argument about not going to Palau is that Palau was already isolated. But, you know, these are not things that influence us as far as where we go in Palau or whether or not we're going to make our film or what importance any MIA has. So
Yes, and I was fascinated, Jennifer, with the scenes where some of the loved ones of these downed soldiers and pilots actually went on a search with Dr. Scannon.
The biggest surprise and the biggest reward of this entire experience has been the families of the MIAs. We were so worried that when we brought them information, we would be opening up an old wound and we wouldn't be met with welcomed arms. And what we found was so startling, we thought people had moved on. We thought that after 60 years, you know, this would be old. This isn't. This is a wound that, if anything, these families tend to keep open. They share this wound for generations. And when we came knocking, they were so grateful. It just about floored us. So when anybody asked if they could go to Palau and help or be part of or go and see after we had found, I mean, there's only one answer.
the little poignant ceremony that Dr. Scannon would hold for the veteran, it was so touching.
Well,
and seemed to help the loved ones and seemed to give them closure.
That's the remarkable thing, if we hear closure thrown around as a word so frequently and to actually get and understand what that means to a family, then that word becomes much greater. That the ability to hold a simple ceremony at any rec site, we fold an American flag over the site, more if we know there were more missing or more family members. We also fold Palauan flags over the site because, in all honesty, it's the Palauan people that make this possible. They are the providers of our leads. They welcome us into their country. They understand what we're doing, and they have an overwhelming sense of importance about what we're doing and how important it is to be able to bring our loved ones home and bring our missing back home. It's very rewarding to be part of.
I can imagine that. And so after 60 years, someone finally found a way of thanking the Palau MIAs and their families for the sacrifices of those brave soldiers. I can't think of another film that we could have had featured on our show today that would have been more appropriate to celebrate Veterans Day. And I wanted to see if we have any comments from the chat room or questions that should be brought to our attention. So, Nikki, what's going on in the chat?
Well, of course, we're having fun, and people are mentioning, their favorite shows, their favorite movies. And this is one that I'm not really sure of, if this is, because Flygaze is in there, and she mentioned Mrs. Miniver. Mrs. Miniver?
Oh, Mrs. Miniver.
Miniver, that's it.
Yes,
see, I don't know that show.
With Greer Garson.
Yeah.
Right, what an interesting movie to mention, but that certainly had to do with England's efforts in the Second World War. It was a great film.
Yeah. And Last Flight Home, oh wait, that was Jazz. He might have already said that, yeah.
No, that was just me putting the link in for everybody in the chat so they could go order the DVD.
Gotcha. I'm sorry. I'm multitasking.
Thank you so much
that.
For doing that.
He did.
Right.
We always
appreciate the people in the chat. And,
we do.
Thank them very much for participating and sharing their reactions and opinions with us. Excuse me, was that John?
It is. Can I ask Jennifer a question about the movie?
I wish you would.
I looked at the website, but I'm just wondering, are these missing soldiers, were they all aviators, or did all of them crash in Palau, or some of them were on the ground campaign?
Our focus is the aviators.
Uh-huh.
the battlefield has been fairly strongly worked over between the Japanese and the American forces during that time. There are some ground forces that are still MIA on Palau and throughout the Peleliu Islands. And, of course, should we come across any evidence of that, we will share that with JPAC and do everything we can. But for us, we are a group of pretty much aviation experts.
Right.
And to be able to find some sort of demarcation, a big chunk of aluminum someplace, that's a needle in a stack of needles that's possible to find and to be able to find evidence of through talking to Palauans and through speaking with aviators who witnessed the crash. So it's not so much about that we're not interested in finding anything we can. It comes down to a demarcation and the ability to find something and identify it.
Sure. Do you ever parachute down to the sites where the planes crashed, given your...
We don't set up in Palau. It's pretty... It's fairly dense jungle. I mean, it's a triple canopy jungle throughout Bobbledop. The mangroves are incredibly medieval little areas with their prongs that reach up through the waters, like punji sticks as you're walking. So if it's low tide, you can see the punji sticks and try to dance around them. And if it's higher tide, you can't see the punji sticks that you're stepping on. And the one of the things that I have to say about Palau, though, it is one of the most beautiful places on the planet. And
I've never been there, but I will tell you I have overshot the DZ once and gone into a tree. And it's no way you want to land, so no, you're probably better off taking a boat.
So where were you skydiving?
Just in the northeast mostly. I went once down to Z Hills in Florida, but I jumped in Verona in New York and down at Endless Mountains in Pennsylvania.
Oh, great. Yeah, Dan used to own co-owned Skydance Skydiving on the West Coast.
Oh, cool. Yeah, I never made it out that far. I went to Chicago once, but we didn't get to jump because the day we got there it was storming, but now I'm derailing the whole show, so I'm going to shut up.
Well, the answer is Palau would not be a great place to skydive. It's a stunning place to be over top of, but there's not a lot of good landing areas. And I don't think it would make good film footage either, so that's the most important thing.
Well, Jennifer, how have viewers reacted to Last Flight Home so far? I know it's only been out since September, right?
Yes. It's been universal. I mean, and overwhelming for us in the fact that folks have enjoyed it. And the thing that we were nervous about in creating a documentary about this project is that we didn't want it to be too heavy and morose, and we wanted to make sure that folks understood that this is a grand adventure in addition to everything else. It is solemn. It is important, but it's also a grand adventure, and we hope, in the theme of Indiana Jones, because that's who we all wanted to be when we grew up.
Exactly. We still want to be Indiana Jones.
Yeah, exactly. And so if you had the opportunity to follow Indiana Jones around the jungles, would you do it? We did it. The reaction has been very overwhelming for us and gratifying.
What did Dr. Scannon think about it?
Well, he's a very reserved individual, and part of the reason we were so enamored with him is that this is somebody that if you walked into a room filled with interesting individuals, he's going to be the last person you pick out. He's unassuming, he's quiet, he's an everyman. He was overwhelmed with the film, again, mostly because of the families involved and the fact that they were so generous with their time. And he was very pleased to have his project shown and so that we can take it out and show it to other folks. I know I don't sound very articulate in spending this out, but it's difficult to describe their reactions in just a few words.
Well,
I find it amazing that somebody is doing that on their own dime to help out the families of veterans. I know a couple of other just really high-profile, high-attendance shows that have a lot of appreciation for veterans that I would like to get together with you offline because I helped produce a show on Ustream for Ed Morrissey, and I know he would love to talk to you.
Oh, I would love to. That's what brought us into this, is the fact that, Pat wasn't looking for any acclaim. He does this all on his own, and he's attracted this group of volunteers who are doing the same thing. It's just really magnificent to be part of it. And
well,
over
it's
and
very...
above,
Yeah. It's so inspiring. I mean, it really is one of the most inspiring films that I've seen, and I just can't thank you enough for the work that you've done putting that film together, you and Daniel, and then, you know, for the wonderful work that all the volunteers are doing. Now, I have a question for you. Will you go on to produce and direct other movies?
Sure.
All right.
I haven't found out what that is yet.
What type of movies would you like to do? Adventure stories, adventure films?
You know, it's going to have to be something that grabs my heart. It's going to have to be something that just grabs a hold and doesn't let go. And what's the saying? Get obsessed and stay obsessed. It needs to be all driving. So at the moment, we're still obsessed with Last Flight Home and the Bent Prop Project, and we'll see how things develop.
Traditionally, documentaries are just so hard to make, and even more so hard to make them commercially profitable as opposed to, you know, going with the big house and doing the fiction and comedies and things like that. How have you found the experience in terms of, you know, was it at least financially break even? Is it something that you're in a position to be able to continue doing, or
break even? That's a ways away. No.
That wasn't meant to be an offensive question. That was just the genre in general.
It's not offensive. It's not offensive at all. Yeah, it's not offensive at all.
But you know, most things that you grab that grab your heart are not more than break even a lot of the time. So
exactly, I laugh because, you know, while money should be a qualification, it's just never been something that's been all that important, which it probably explains why we don't have any.
Join the club. Welcome to the club.
Exactly. What was important was to be able to produce the film. So in some ways, as hard as documentaries are to produce and as expensive and hard to get out in front of the public eye, their reward has to be in themselves. It can't be something external. And that's been a little hard to swallow and to learn about. But I think that they're so worthwhile anyway. And that if there are people out there who are so passionate about a subject or a project that they're willing to put their own funds out there and make it happen, all the better. I'm happy to watch them.
Well, it would be super if eventually there was a version of this that you could get later on put onto something like the Discovery Channel or the Science Channel to get a wider audience, because it certainly
sure.
sounds like a topic that's very deserving of, you know.
Yeah, we'd very much like that.
Audience.
We'd very, very much like that. And, you know, the hardest thing to understand about making a film, especially if you're going to self-produce it, is that it's in essence, a really bad idea. And many, many people told us that. They kept saying, no, don't self-produce. Don't do this yourself. You really don't want to do that. They're mistaken in the fact that we did want to do that. And we can't be more pleased with how the film has turned out. We got to make the film of our dreams, and for that, there's no better reward than that.
Right, and it's there for other people to enjoy and to get inspired by, and it's something you'll never regret doing.
No, not at all. Not at all. So I was not at all offended by the question.
What's the most important thing you want people to know about you and this movie, Jennifer? That's a kind of a question that I ask all of the guests on Movie Addict Headquarters, so I didn't want to neglect asking you that question. I already know the answer, I think, but go ahead.
Well, let's see. Let's see how it pares down. I think that the most important thing to take away is that any individual can make a difference. It just takes effort. You have to want to do it. And Dr. Scannon is making a difference in these people's lives on a day-to-day basis, whether they be the families of the MIAs or any individual that comes in contact with his project. And just can't help but be inspired by the fact that, you know, it just takes buckling down and making stuff happen, whether it be in your own backyard or on the other side of the planet. How does that shape up for your answer?
That's just about what I was thinking. We've got ESP going here, and I want to make sure that everyone has had a chance to ask questions. So, John, do you have any additional questions for Jennifer?
Well, I just it's more of a statement than a question, but I hope that you know our government is helping you out, and that the organization that you mentioned that's in charge of getting the remains back is fully supportive of the movie and Dr. Scannon.
Yeah, they're a pretty fabulous organization, and the relationship between Bent Prop and Last Flight Home and JPAC is very warm and gracious. We feel very, very lucky.
So that's encouraging to know. And Jazz, any additional questions for Jennifer?
No questions, because you let me sneak a lot of them in. I just wanted to say thank you for making the film, and particularly on Veterans Day as a veteran. You know, I think that's fantastic that you're bringing that to light, because it just sounds like such an unbelievable thing for someone to do, and it certainly does deserve a lot of recognition.
Well, thank you so much.
And Nikki, do you have any additional questions for Jennifer or any comments you'd like to make?
I don't, but I just really appreciate you guys taking the time on this Veterans Day to have this discussion and to bring things forward that are important, because I think that filmmaking is very socially important, and I just really appreciate you very much.
Thank you.
Well, thank you, Nikki. I think you speak for all of us when you made that comment. I can't believe that our time is almost up. It just went by so fast, and
every week
it seems to go by faster. So I don't want to forget to thank Jennifer and John and Jazz and Nikki for their wonderful contributions to the show today. And Jennifer, I know that The Last Flight Home will be a big success. We'll be sending you extra special good vibes. And please tell Daniel that we missed him, but we'll be after him still to come on the show. Would you do that for us?
Oh, of course I will. And thank you so much, Betty Jo, for having us on.
It's been a very great pleasure to have you here. This is Betty Jo Tucker giving a big shout out to all the folks at Blog Talk Radio for their support in connection with this show. Special thanks to my producer extraordinaire, Nikki Starr, for everything she does to make Movie Addict Headquarters happen. Thanks also to everyone who listened live or to the archives or who took part in the chat. We really appreciate it. Please come back next Tuesday at 4 p.m. for another lively discussion about movies. In the meantime, check out our film reviews at realtalkreviews.com. That's R-E-E-L, realtalkreviews.com. As usual, to close the show, here's the talented A.J. Daniels with the song Nikki and I dedicate to all our Blog Talk Radio listeners.
shallow.